This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. For your Tuesday. Good to be with you here. Wild weather coming through here. I'll talk a little bit more about this later, but apparently what, 9 semi-trucks tipped over down on 35 in Faribault because the winds came through.
Ow.
Ugh. Looked like North Dakota. That happens out in the Dakotas all the time. It doesn't happen too much here, but line storms came through. It's a little bit nasty out there. Not so bad right now, but do anticipate on and off weather. We'll get to all that a little bit later on. Of course, Patrick Cooligan, our good friend over at Minnesota Reformer, joins Brett here coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. But right now, Jack Rice is kind enough to join us. He's our expert in legal issues as well as also our international affairs issues. Jack Rice Defense. You can find Jack Rice Defense, the best defense lawyer in Minneapolis, St. Paul, at jackricelaw.com. Hey, Jack.
Yeah, great to be with you again. Thanks for having me on the program.
No, it's my pleasure. My show is always better when you're here. It really is. let's start. Okay, so there's a trend I'm noticing, and we'll go through this, that when we've had Kyle Rittenhouse, we'll talk about the attempted kidnapping and murder of the governor of Michigan. We've got the case of the South Dakota Attorney General. We have had a new turn where we have people who are GOP darlings or politicians or whatever you want to call it, far right individuals committing undeniable crimes. I mean, Kyle Rittenhouse should not have been there. That was not his hometown. That was not his business. He brought the gun. He instigated the fight and he killed three people in the street and they found him not guilty. And, you know, and as well as also, we finally have an impeachment trial going to happen in South Dakota, amazingly. I'll get to that in a second. But you've got this case in Michigan where it's known they were plotting to kidnap and kill the governor prior to the FBI being involved. They clearly were going along with the idea of kidnapping and killing the governor after the FBI was involved. But yet they acquitted two of them and they're still a hung jury on lesser charges. What is your thoughts on this? Because it is really somewhat shocking that the party of law and order doesn't seem to want to hold their own members to law or order.
Oh, well, there are two things to think about. Venue being one of them, which we'll get to in a sec. And the other is the perception of law enforcement. And I think that piece in some ways is actually crossing political boundaries. And maybe we start with that one first. Okay. The idea that we question the quality of and the integrity and even honesty of law enforcement. We are seeing that across the board at all levels. This includes not just local police officers like the Minneapolis Police Department, not like just like the Brooklyn Center Police Department, the St. Paul Police Department. This is going all the way up to the FBI. And so what we saw was that happening in this case. That's one piece. The venue piece is another one. And that one's a little bit different. What venue really is it means where a trial takes place. Now, you have to contemplate where this trial took place of these four men charged with essentially attempting to kidnap and murder a sitting Michigan governor. They are in, it depends on where you sit. If you're from Michigan, you might call it this, Central Michigan. But really, you think the Upper Peninsula, there's that part. Some people call that Northern Michigan. And then there's the Central Michigan or Western Central Michigan, Grand Rapids area. They are extremely conservative in many, many ways. And what you got was a jury who looked at this, who was consistently pushing in that direction. The problem, of course, is that from a prosecutor's standpoint, how do you move venue if you're essentially a county attorney and say, the people in my own county can't rule fairly in a case, and so therefore I need to move it someplace else? It's political suicide, so they're stuck with that. And in this particular case, what you ended up with, well, frankly, was an acquittal in two and a hung jury in two. There we sit.
When I read through the trial of this a little bit and some of the highlights of that trial, let's just go once again. Am I crazy? I mean, even if you believe their argument with the FBI, that these grown adults, they smoke too much pot and they're not responsible for the actions because the big bad mean FBI guy was the one that was the coordinator of all of this. That's kind of, that was their argument. But it still does not explain. I mean, to come to the rulings they came to, you have to ignore the fact that they were plotting on doing this prior to the FBI being involved. That is that was an established fact, as well as also that at no point did they look at the FBI guy and say, hey, I like my dope and all, but hey, I'm not going to go kidnap and kill the governor. That's on you. They clearly were going along with this. This should have been a conviction, shouldn't have? I think at least it looked like it.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. This is generally what you're always looking for. And this is sort of what happens when I'm dealing with criminal defense cases. There's always a question of entrapment. And that's really what the defense was arguing. They were arguing that but for the FBI, this never would have happened. But the response from the prosecution, and this is actually what they argued, they argued that the defense, that these four men took multiple steps, multiple opportunities to move towards this crime. So let's go down the list. What they did was they cased the governor's vacation home twice. Remember, this was the plan. What they were going to do is they were going to talk about knocking out a bridge where the governor's vacation home was, kidnapping the governor, doing one of two things, taking her out to the middle of Lake Michigan and dropping her into Lake Michigan, or taking her to a secondary location and actually hanging her. That's part of it. So what they did was they cased this vacation home multiple times, drawing maps of the area, buying binoculars, $3,800 worth of binoculars, building an actual model of the cottage so they could practice an extraction, how you would go down that piece, using encrypted chats to conceal what they were doing. They practiced using explosives so they can actually get ready to use this. So this was all part of those active steps. And when ultimately they went to meet and to prepare and to start this process, that's when the FBI nabbed back and said, it wasn't us. It was one of the undercover informants known as Big Dan. It was Big Dan who drove this. It wasn't us, despite the fact that each of these men, again, allegedly, went through the process of all of those things. There we sit.
I made the point. I said it's ludicrous to act as if these grown white men, they were just foils. They really didn't do anything. They smoked some dope. And I kept saying to myself, if this was the same people who are saying that, if this was four, black 12-year-olds, committed crime, the first words out of their mouth would have been, don't try to blame anyone else for the actions. They knew exactly what they did. Try them as adults. And
how about this one, Matt? One of the things they did with Big Dan was that one of the things they practiced with is one of them was using a balloon filled with peas. And the idea was you cook this to the point that it explodes and it spreads shrapnel out. So it can cause massive havoc to human beings. And they actually tried this. And so if that is not a step forward in the process, this isn't just a bunch of guys sitting around spouting off. I mean, they argued that's what it was. Mm-hmm. But what they were trying to say was, this is a bunch of Yahoo nothing angry guys sitting around a bar drinking together, talking about this abstract idea. But it ignores the planning, the process, the weapons, the destruction, the building of a cottage so they could work on the extraction piece. I mean, these are all specific steps that go way beyond Billy Bob sitting around with his cousins or his buddies and simply saying, what we're going to do here, boys, is we're going to take this lady out. And then they drink a few more beers and they go home and fall asleep. This wasn't that. But guess what? A jury in venue, the right kind of jury, and this is why that issue of the right kind of jury matters so much, came down with not guilty, a failure by the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it happened for two, and a hung jury for the other two. That is astounding.
And is there any other way that these people could be held accountable? Is that an option?
It's going to be hard. I mean, there's the two they can always try again, but they're afraid to. I mean, how about this? What isn't even mentioned, there's a couple of guys, at least one guy we know for sure, but a couple, as I understand it, who actually pled guilty and agreed to testify for the police, to testify for the state in this case. So these guys actually pled guilty cooperated with the government, they will now be held accountable. But the guys that were the real players, those guys were not, are not, won't be. Now, two of them could be, but I think there's a lot of people with a lot of heartburn right now saying, do we really want to do this again, or do we really want to just move on?
I think you got to. I mean, they tried to kidnap and kill the governor. And I think that if you just shrug your shoulders on this, you quite literally will just be asking for this to happen. I guarantee you, the second that verdict came down, there are militia groups in Michigan who are like, okay, all right, how do we do this? We need to go get her because we'll not be held accountable in this state.
Well, you know that one of the things that I think does happen is that it's such a wacky plan. It's such a wacky thing to do. I don't mean wacky in the sense of if they had been able to accomplish it, but if you just hear it, you sort of sit there and go, wow, who are these yahoos? And the idea that anybody would actually do it, it's such an extraordinary plan that you would actually be willing to try to take a sitting governor of a state because you didn't like how they actually made the rulings and made the decisions that they made, that you would get so invested that you would decide you're going to go and murder that person. It's so astounding that the defense actually has the benefit of how crazy that is. Because what you can say is, who would actually think of that? That is just, that's insane that anybody would think that way. And a bunch of people would shake their head and say, yes, that's insane. And then you can come back very quickly with, exactly. That's exactly it. If this is that insane, nobody really could have planned to do this. Not even these four yahoos.
It's unbelievable. Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. Jack Rice Defense, once again, is the law firm. Jack, let's look in South Dakota. Here's another example. Now, okay, clearly, and I said this the other day, if this was a Democratic attorney general in South Dakota, not only would he have been thrown out of office a year plus ago, he probably would have already been in jail for a long time. They clearly in South Dakota are defending him, although it does look like they're at the very least they could do. They had a 36 to 31 vote in the House, South Dakota House, to hold Attorney General Jason Rovsberg. They impeached him basically. So there's now going to be a trial in the Senate where they have to get 2/3 majority in the Senate. And the likelihood is they won't because this guy hit a man on the road, hit him so hard they found his glasses in the front seat of his car, and he still tried to play off, oh, I hit a deer.
What does it say when we put politics ahead of country? I mean, I realize that never happens. I realize when we talk about impeachment that we never contemplate how things should work. I realize when we're actually voting for somebody who is a potential justice of the Supreme Court, we would never decide that even if they're one of the most competent, capable individuals to probably ever sit and have and actually has more trial experience than the rest of the court combined, that we would actually look at it politically. Sadly, I think what we're seeing in the country is you're seeing an enormous number of people who've decided that the answer isn't about what's best for all. It's about what's best for us. And that's going to be a very huge downfall because there will come a point when the vast majority of people, all of us outside of the political realm, those who are pulling the levers of power, will simply disengage. And when that happens, you will see this start to spin out of control in a way that we haven't seen. This concept of rule of law that we all buy in, when nobody buys in anymore, you can do all sorts of things because people are like, well, you know what? Those guys do it. You know what happened when Obama was in office? You know what happened when George Bush was in office? You know what happened when Reagan was in office? When Bill Clinton was in office? I mean, you decide which side you're on. But if we get to the place where all we have to do now is say, well, as long as we win, that's what happens when you get to this place. And we're watching it happen as we speak.
Well, and can I bring up the obvious point? I mean, it's you're right. We're at a point right now where, especially in the right in this country, it is party over country, and that is just the way it is. And this is 40 years of brainwashing and far right policy on example. I mean, you can't get even moderate Republicans, I know, won't vote against the Republican Party, even though that they're disgusted by it because they've just been brainwashed into doing it. What you're talking about now, though, is say that in Hennepin County, we have a trial, a cop kills someone, and they hold him accountable. Now, what it seems like is not that that was bias, that we just held the officer accountable. In Republican areas, the mentality is now, well, we can't hold cops accountable because they held that one accountable down there with that liberal judgment, even though it wasn't, it was just a judgment. And so now they're going to go out of their way to basically try to right that wrong in their own mind by allowing officers that might have killed someone somewhere else to go free. I mean, that's really, as I see this playing out, that's where eventually this is headed. It's just going to be if you dare hold someone accountable, then we'll do our best to never hold anyone else accountable.
No, we're seeing that all over the country.
Yeah.
I mean, you can watch this. I do a lot of thing on law and crime and a lot of stuff on Court TV and elsewhere. And you can look at a lot of national criminal trials, and you'll see that happening right now. I mean, there's a district attorney down in Texas who has actually been prosecuting the police for misconduct. And I believe the number is like 15. But the reason he's doing that is because their behavior is over the top in terms. It was undeniable. And the problem is what you're seeing is that in that particular case, large swaths of law enforcement seeing him as the enemy. And the question becomes is what happens when true law and order, I don't mean law and order in the sense that you shine up the badge and you put it sort of on the stage and you hold it up as sacrosanct. I mean true law and order, when that is actually going to be the standard and that may actually cut against those in uniform who are acting inappropriately, is the standard. And you see the police on the other side of it. Then you're in a very, very, very difficult place again. This takes us back. It's your problem when you see this as a systemic failure. And we're really getting to that place where it's not just political, but it's also in terms of race, in terms of bias, in terms of law enforcement application and what all that means. And if we don't really sit down and recognize this and we're seeing the left is acknowledging that this is what this means, but frequently I'm seeing it on the right. Not always, because there are some of those traditional Republicans who are out there who are fiscal Republicans, but otherwise they're actually in the right place. And in that case, you're seeing a very large number of people who are saying, whatever the Dems are for, we're against. Whatever they don't want, we're for. Well, what about being right? And I should say, what about being correct?
Mm-hmm. It's... That's disturbing.
That's what I'm here for.
But you're spot on.
We're not with you. We can talk about the weather. Oh,
you're spot on. No, you're 1,000% correct, sir. But yeah, God. One last thing, if I can. 1-6 committee now says they have enough evidence to basically recommend criminal charges against Trump. There's obviously, even though there's a lot of lawyers that are on that committee, and there's a lot of legal experts here. Talk about that. Just what's that bar that they have reached then?
It's a race for time.
Okay.
I mean, really, in the end of the day, this is a race for time. And that the real fear in the end is that no matter what else happens, what happens if the Republicans can take it? If they can take a majority, they shut down everything.
Yeah.
And that's really what the fight is right now. So you're seeing this on this question and whether or not they're willing to do it. There's an enormous amount of evidence. And they seem to be trying to fill in every single gap. But remember, you're getting... a systemic failure because a large swath of the political parties themselves, the Republicans themselves, are trying to shut down the very investigation to determine not just whether or not Trump is guilty, but whether or not anything happened. They want to say that nothing happened rather than saying, let's find out what happened. That is extraordinary that that's where we sit right now. Think about so many different things about what was going on with Nixon and Watergate. Think about what was going on with other sort of corruption aspects of the past where we actually said, what happened? Was it our fault? Was it their fault? Was it his fault? But what you're seeing now is to say, I don't care. I don't care what happened. Let's just move along.
It's, and I don't know how you ever fix this. And that's the thing, but it is.
Well, you don't fix it if you can't even look at it.
Exactly. Exactly. And they don't want to look at it. As a matter of fact, they want to keep encouraging. And that's the problem. Jack Rice.
By the way, isn't that really the problem, right? At the end of the day, it's one of those things where, you know, until you admit you have a problem, says that's the only step forward first. If you got to say, I got a problem before you can actually address it. Well, if you just deny that the problem exists, so I guess everybody wins or loses.
It's so negative
today, Matt. What's going on?
It's a very them and us thing. This is what the Republicans have been breeding for basically the last 40 years, and it's now come to fruition. And this is, you know, they wanted a world where there will be no accountability ever for Republicans and constant accountability for Democrats, even if they've done nothing. And they pretty much have achieved that. And until the Democrats find their frickin' spines and actually start, you know, punching the bullies in the face, they're just not going to be able to counterpoint this, and that's the problem that we've got right now. So, Jack Rice defense, it is, if you need a defense lawyer, call Jack, sit down, talk with him. He is the best defense lawyer in Minneapolis, St. Paul. JackRiceLaw.com, JackRiceLaw.com. Jack, hey, I appreciate it. It's we have to be honest, and today was a lot of honesty, so I appreciate the time today, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye.
Jack Rice, once again, the Minnesota Attorney of the Year in 2021. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. It is where we are at today. And trust me, this is... You're seeing the same exact thing play out right now. All of a sudden, it's like all these Republicans are Hunter Biden. Oh, he was working with the Chinese. He was working with Ukrainians. Oh, he was getting money. Oh, hey, by the way, we got $2 billion going to Jared Kushner from the Saudis. We can't look at that. That was just, oh, God, why do you make a, we don't want to look at that. And there are Republicans right now trying to figure out a way. Well, what they're really doing is trying to wait the week out. Let the Jared Kushner story run its course. Hope people forget about it and then come back. Hunter Biden. Because that's where we're at right now. I mean, Hillary Clinton was there. How many Benghazi investigations were there? How many Clinton Foundations investigations were there? They did nothing wrong, for God's sakes. And they constantly investigated them as the crime of the century. Oh, my crime of all time. How many times have you heard of a friend coming to you and saying, oh, the Hunter Biden laptop. Oh, on Monday, the headlines are, it's going to be the biggest disgrace in the history of mankind. And you have, what about the guy that tried to overthrow the election and had a mob storm the Capitol? That's nothing. If you hold him accountable, that's just. The same people who, that screamed in 2016 about how you got to accept the outcome of the election, you got to do this, and then all of a sudden they didn't want to, and this is the world we live in, and this is what happens. And maybe I'll talk about this a little more. I'll take a break, come on back, and we'll talk a little about this a little bit more. But this is really what happens when you have 40 years of conservatives telling you it's not you, it's them. Them. They're the problem. You're the good guy. They're the bad guy. And, it really is disturbing. It really is disturbing. I'll tell you right now, Grand Rapids, Michigan, I'll never go to your town. I will never go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. I don't know what the hell's going on over there. But I'm not going to go there for this reason. I'm afraid that if you found out that I was a progressive radio host, someone would just, hey, liberal host, bang, shoot me right in the face in the middle of the street. And then the fine people of Grand Rapids will say, Mr. McNeil got a little lippy. So, we should really throw the book at this guy. I think it was, he smoked dope. He was at home. He smoked dope. All the grown adult, he smoked dope. He can't be held accountable. I'm dead serious. I can't go there. Sweet Jesus, I won't go to Idaho. I won't go to Idaho. I'm seriously, Idaho, there is no chance in the world that clearly, if you have these guys and you can't get a conviction, there's no chance in the world that a Republican doing something Republicans fantasize about, we're going to go kidnap the governor and kill her. Oh my God, it'd be awesome. And they get caught doing it. And as Jack said, it wasn't just talk. I mean, they were going through the motions here. They were trying to get down to a point where they were going to do it. And when you got all that evidence, well, we can't hold them accountable. I mean, that is where we're at. We're in a country right now where Republicans, Kyle Rittenhouse had no reason to be in Wisconsin. He had no reason to be there at all. He brought the gun. He confronted the crowd himself. He basically threatened them by pointing the gun at them, and then he shot them on camera. We have all seen it. He murdered three people in the streets, and he was found not guilty. Why? Because he was a Republican. But once again, I want to just take any of these cases. Kyle Rittenhouse, the Michigan terrorists, Rosberg over in South Dakota, and I'll get more to him in a little bit. But in any of those cases, what would have happened if they were black? Forget about if they're black. What happens if in South Dakota, if that's a Democratic attorney general? He would already be in jail. He would have been kicked out of office. The Republicans would all be like, how dare you? My God, how stupid do you think we are, Attorney General? You're out of office. We're going to throw you in jail for the rest of your life. You need to apologize. That's the same exact people who barely voted 2 years after the fact. Barely voted to impeach the Attorney General. Barely voted to do this. That is where you're at. You're at a country where there's the same people that scream law and order. They're not screaming law and order. They're screaming, you know, law and order for black people and liberals and hippies, but no law and order whatsoever. It's just a harmless mistake. Sure, that you know, come on. So they were plotting to kill and kidnap and kill the governor. What's the big deal? I mean, this is who they are, for God's sakes. So a few people stormed the government to try to overthrow democracy and install Donald Trump as president and get rid of democracy for the history of the country. Well, what's the big deal? They quite literally do not see the problem there. And that is where you're at. And it comes down to, and once again, it comes down to one thing really simple here, that 30% of the country believes that. Not all Republicans, but the core base of the Republicans, they believe that. 70% of the country doesn't. But unless you get that freaking 70% of the country out in mass to vote, well, then you got no chance. Because, frankly, there's 60% of this country that likes to sit on their, or 40% of this country likes to sit on their butts and do nothing every election cycle. Like, what do you mean there's a government? I don't know how you're going to ever get those guys motivated. Maybe it is finally getting to something where, you know, the Republicans are rounding people up in the street and basically shutting down the internet and doing these things. Maybe that's when it finally all of a sudden it's like, hey, wait a minute here. But right now, you look at the war on a woman's right to choose going on in this, and frankly, it's depressing to see how many, you know, people just seem to be shrugging their shoulders. Most people want abortion to be legal in this country. 65% do. But as it's getting wiped out left and right, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I guess it's what's going to happen. Unless you're willing to change things, this is the world that you are helping to create. So I don't know what else. I'll talk more about this in a second. And Gary, I'll get your phone call in just a moment. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A little bit of entertainment news that happened. Gilbert Gottfried, the American actor and stand-up comedian known for his distinctive voice, to say the least, has died. He was 67 years old. He had just posted a picture of him with Louis Anderson and Bob Saget. And, you know, they must have been doing some kind of comedy thing together. And just, yeah, the picture is somewhat heartbreaking now as he posted, and now he's passed away. We are heartbroken to announce the passing of our beloved Gilbert Gottfried after a long illness. Gottfried's family said in a tweet announcing the news. In addition to being the most iconic voice in comedy, Gilbert was a wonderful husband, brother, friend, and father to his two young children. Although today is a sad day for all of us, please keep laughing as loud as possible in Gilbert's honor. Some of his stand-up is absolutely hilarious.
Oh, very underrated, yeah.
Iago from Aladdin, too. The bird and Aladdin.
Yeah, yeah.
He was one of those guys, you do a cartoon voice and you knew the second he started talking, oh, that's Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
So At 67, young. I don't know. It doesn't say which disease he had. Did you hear anything about that?
I didn't know he had any sort of terminal illness. So that, too bad. Very funny guy.
Very funny. Basketball. Give me that basketball. Basketball. Slam it. Have you ever seen that skit from Saturday Night Live?
No.
The John Teshman. Okay, it's good. Basketball. Tonight, the Timberwolves, when was the last time they were in the playoffs?
Well, they had that one little run with Jimmy Butler where they got into the playoffs one year. But, yeah, that's been it since I was in high school. Because prior to that year, the last time the Timberwolves made the playoffs, I went to that game. Against the Lakers in the conference finals, my senior year. That's how long it had been.
Let me ask you something here, and dead serious. People, I do not follow. I love college basketball. I do not follow the NBA as much. I just don't. It doesn't mean I don't like it. It just is. There's too many sports to cover, and it's one of those that I'll pay attention to the scores and the standings, but I don't really pay that much.
That's about me too. Yeah.
What they have said is this: this playoff game is the toughest thing they got right now because the Clippers basically they do not match up well against the LA Clippers. That's tonight. Because I guess the NBA didn't feel finishing eighth or seventh warranted you just making the playoffs. Now they got to try to steal some of the shimmer from the NCAA and potentially knock out a team that should be a playoff team. But if they get past this, they're saying that the matchup for the T-Wolves would be pretty good. And I don't quite know. Is that – do you know anything about that?
Yeah, they would – I believe they would play Memphis if they end up beating the Clippers. And even if they lose to the Clippers, they would get one other chance, I think, on Thursday or Friday to host the winner of the 9-10 seed. So they have two chances to get in. They would both be at home. But as you said, anything can happen in a one-game playoff. So even though the Wolves had a nice season, they could be done by the end of the week, unfortunately.
Great.
Yeah. Losing if they lose the game on Thursday or Friday, it would just be depressing because the two teams below them, 9th and 10th, I think are way below 500.
Yeah.
One game knocked out.
There you go. Yeah. Hopefully, I would like to see the T-Wolves do it. I like Cat. I do. Carl Anthony Towns. I like him, and I like that team. And there's a lot of good. There seems to be a lot of nice guys on that team, and a lot of strong players are hustling. Which is that's the thing I've not seen. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I don't follow basketball is I've got tired of watching teams that don't hustle.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the NBA regular season. That's why I think, like, the NBA and NHL playoffs, I'll follow that. But the regular season, I'll maybe watch one Timberwolves game the whole year. Playoffs are great, though.
I can't watch the NHL playoffs just because it's like, all right, every top seed just got knocked off. So it's 5, 6, 7, and 8 left in each. Okay, why am I watching this? That's
not wrong.
Yeah, it's not wrong. Gary is in Minneapolis. Welcome in, Gary. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Matt. Good to hear you again on the phone. Hey, yeah, there's only one basketball. I haven't followed that since Elgin Baylor ripped the seal with the Lakers. But I was going to just say, the Republicans are good at bashing immigrants, especially non-white ones. But there's one immigrant we need to deport if we ever could, and that's Rupert Murdoch. She's done so much damage to our country. And you're talking about research. How about Whitewater? 8 years and never found a darn thing. Yeah. And then I'm worried about if they take Congress now, that one of the things I'm worried about is all these terrible people, these investigations over nothing. They get them over there like a inquisition.
Oh, no, it's very much an inquisition. Thanks, Gary. I appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, look at Judge Jackson. Yeah, bye.
Bye. Take care. No, it'd very much be an inquisition. I can't even comprehend. They will shut down all the legitimate investigations into Trump and basically start 15 investigations into Hunter Biden and demand that he attend, you know, he testify for 4 days straight from 8 a.m. until 9 p.m. with 2 hour windows for every Republican to go out there and get all their, and that's all they're doing is getting that those clips so they can play it on Hannity and Tucker's Carlson show. I mean, okay, once again, the election is coming up. It's not over. But get off your damn lazy asses and go get all these people registered to vote and get them to the damn polls. I know that that's harsh to hear, but I'm tired of belly aching. Oh, whatever. We see the die is cast. We see the world that's out there. We see exactly what is going on. I mean, has any media outlet actually tried to hold any Republican accountable for their, you know, do you believe that Donald Trump won in 2020? Do you believe the 1-6 committee, you know, riots were harmless? Do you think it was a good idea to tell people not to or discourage people from getting vaccinated and wearing masks? Not a freaking no media is going to do that. But if a Democrat is, what did you know and when did you know it? Oh my gosh, when are you going to apologize for all the things, the bad things you've never done, huh? Because that's the media. It comes down to getting people to the polls. Going back to what Jack was saying, go back in time, 40 years ago. Basically, let's go back to the early 80s. Republicans with Reagan never wanted to revisit Nixon again. They never wanted to, even though Nixon was held accountable, as he should have, the mistake was made, and Republicans, and this was that whole Reagan thing, that 11th commandment, thou shalt not do anything ill will to other Republicans. That was that whole thing, is because there was that Republican movement that came in the aftermath of Nixon and Ford, and basically said the real problem here was the Republicans that turned on Nixon. So we'll never turn on the Republicans. Will never turn on the on a Republican president or a Republican politician. Matt Gaetz is still allowed to go and sit in Congress. They will never hold that person accountable. They came up with a plan to control the media, and it came down to accomplished two of the tasks. One was to get rid of the fairness doctrine, which basically said that if you had a conservative voice on your radio station, you had to have a liberal voice on the radio station to give differing opinion. And they said, well, we shouldn't be micromanaging radio stations like this, and got it. And immediately, the second that happened, quality was no longer what you wanted in radio broadcasters. It was ideology. So it was. I mean, you immediately got, you wonder why those radio show hosts and stuff like that back then were so good, because you had to be good. That the second that they got rid of the fairness doctrine, all of a sudden it was just like, you don't have to be good. You just have to spew the right talking points. And there you go. The Telecommunications Act of 1996. And yeah, Clinton signed that. And I shouldn't. He shouldn't have, because that got rid of all the ownership rules. So all of a sudden now you have a handful of people owning radio stations and television stations and cable network news networks that can basically just spew one-sided political rhetoric as news. And at no point has anyone, the Democrats back then should have basically said, whoa, you can't call yourself a news network if you're just putting out 90% of your content is political. And they should have called them back then, but they never did. They're, well, if we do that, they're going to call us going after the press. No, you're not going after the press. It's called, fair advertising. You can't be a news network if you're spewing narrative. And even today, if you went to a courtroom and you made Fox News defend their programming as news or opinion, they would lose. They'd have to just call themselves the Fox Network, and they'd have to get rid of news. At least then they'd be honest. But back then, that's what happened. And through the ownership rules, they cut staff, they got rid of these. They controlled the media. They controlled the narrative. And they started feeding that narrative I told you about earlier, which is, it's not you, it's them. It's not you, it's them. No Republican ever did anything wrong, and no Democrat did anything ever right. And they started feeding this. And this is called brainwashing. And this is how evil tyrants take over. This is exactly how it happens, people. This is exactly how it happens. 1990s, the 2000s, the 2010s, a constant, never-ending deluge of it's not you, it's them. They're the enemy. They're the enemy. They're the enemy. They're the enemy. And you start enabling this mentality that you're really the victim. It's all them. It's them. Them. They're your villain. There's the villains right there. Them. Oh, it's all them. And you bring in a more lunatic fringe to basically shore up your base, because you're going to turn off a lot of independents with that kind of mentality. So they bring in the far right loons, and then you eventually get to Trump. And Trump played that part of the country like a fiddle. He did. Trump knew that all these people were desperate to seek validation, and he gave it to them. You're not bad for being a racist. They're the bad people for hearing your racism. Let's just be honest. That's the truth. And you know where, and now it's evolving even more. And that's what we were talking about with Jack. It's evolved now to where Republicans will not hold a Republican clearly guilty of crimes, horrible crimes, accountable. They just won't. But they'll hold Democrats over and over and over again, accountable and accountable and accountable. They'll make up lies. They'll get the right-wing media to make up a lie and then validate the lie by having 15 investigations into the lie. Because it's a machine. And it works so well. They've brainwashed the right so well. For God's sakes, we had a pandemic and they basically said, being a selfish jackass is perfectly okay. So a few people die. Who cares? And that's the narrative, and that's the world we live in. And here's the real crime of it all. Like I said, and I've said this the last few weeks, I know Republicans who will look at me and say, I can't stand where this party's gone. I can't stand this far right. I can't stand Trump. I can't stand, you know, these far right loon candidates. I mean, 1-6 was unforgivable. This is just lunacy. And yet when that person goes into a ballot box, they don't even think about it. Republican. They don't even think about it because they've been brainwashed. And I don't know how you get that back outside of giving these people the monumental ass kicking that they deserve at the ballot box. And no, as you sit there and belly and go, but they're putting all these rules in place that we can't vote. You show up in freaking numbers, there's nothing they can do. Georgia is a great example of that. Kemp down there put law after law after law in place to try to get black people from voting. And Stacey Abrams said, just get them registered to vote and get them to the polls. And they did. And they dominated in Atlanta, and Georgia went blue. So stop it. This is not rocket science. This is not, I've come up with my 60-page strongly worded essay on the boll weevil. Oh, for God's sake. No. Go get people registered and get them to the polls. End of story. And if you don't do that, you're part of the problem. You're not part of the solution, because that's about the only damn thing you're going to do. Because I've lost faith in the fact that the DFL or the Democrats are going to go on out there and actually put out the ad campaign that they need to basically punch these clowns in the crotch. They're not doing it. And it would be easy. This is an easy layup. And yet, once again, they're not doing it. So it comes down to us, the voters. Get everyone registered. Get into the polls. That's about all we can do. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. By the way, I was watching a Warner Stellion video of them putting together one of their new grills over there. Nice. It's like, man, that looks like a nice grill, man.
Fortunately, no one's grilling for the next week, though. But it will happen.
What are you talking about? This is the wrong mindset. This is why America's failing. Brett Johnson, how dare you? You can get out there. It's a little cold. Fine. Flip them a few more times. You can get them nice and cooked.
Well, the wind will help, too, maybe a little bit.
No, the wind will not. That's why you close the grill top. Yeah. Okay. I mean, a long-time smoker, you might have some issues, but turn on that gas grill full high. There you go. You'll cook it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll tell you what, because of the time frame here, I'll get into other things here, because we got next hour, Patrick Cooligan joins us and talks to Brett here with his usual weekly visit. Let's do the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. So once again, the 72-hour period here, so the numbers are once again higher. Tuesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health is the 1,339 newly reported cases. Now, the death count generally doesn't increase until tomorrow's numbers, and I've noticed that. So they've got two newly reported deaths today. That's not taking any away from the sadness. All my best to those families. Horrible still. I mean, this is a massive crisis still. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,449. Today's update was the three-day period started ending at 4 a.m. on Monday. coronavirus variant currently dominant, BA2 version. According to the fine folks at the Metropolitan Council wastewater data, 81% of samples in the seven county metro area are BA2. The remaining 18% are the original Omicron strain of BA1. Through April 17th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 191, down from 201. Reported on April 8th, of those hospitalized, 30 in intensive care, that's down from 31. 160 non-ICU care, that's down from 170. ICU admissions are at their lowest since mid-July 2021. ICU admissions are at the lowest since mid-July. Non-ICU admissions are at the lowest they've been since the beginning of 2021. As of April 11th, the state reported that 3,900,266 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,691,191 people have completed the vaccine series. And there are 2,552,017 Minnesotans who are up to date with their vaccine shots. And that includes boosters, although I don't believe that includes the second booster. Total number of people that have been sickened with COVID in the state of Minnesota, 1,435,232. So, once again, get vaccinated, wear a mask. It's the best thing to do. Now, I understand there's going to be a lot of people. Easter's coming up here. We're going to have a little bit of a family get together. And the mentality we have is this, is that if everyone's feeling fine, you know, and we're going to leave it up to others, but you know, I don't have any problem saying, you know, I'm going to sit in this chair that's over here, kind of away from everyone else. And sometimes if there is someone who's saying I haven't been feeling well, dang right, I'll put a mask on. That doesn't make me weak. It makes me smart, for goodness sakes. It still blows my mind. I'll go to the Y. I was at the Y this morning and weight training. And as I was there, I'm looking around. There's a lot of elderly people working out in the Y. None of them are wearing masks. And I'm like, okay. Okay, like I said, long COVID. We talked about long COVID yesterday. If you want motivations to wear a mask and get your vaccination still, just think about the horrors of long COVID. My goodness. We'll take a break. Coming back. Hour two, that's coming up next.
Program may be pre-recorded.
Sure, why not? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Brett, you know, let me make sure I point out one thing. The reason why I came back from the military, the military is a very unique organization. They teach you not to blame other people. I always remember there was a general, it was one of the big battles in World War II, and I can't remember the general's name, but he was generally there. He basically, and people were telling him things that weren't working, goes, don't tell me things that don't work. Tell me what I've got that does work, and then let's go fix this problem. You know, in regards to troop movements. And that's the game. Don't sit there and tell me about all the bad things that happened to me and it was all their fault. You got a problem. Look in the freaking mirror. That's where you solve it. And I came back and I was actually kind of surprised. I mean, I started seeing it back then. And I got to tell you the truth. I'll just say it like this. It was really bad when I went to Metro Network. And when I was doing Metro traffic, I'm not going to say anything else, but I just... A lot of people that just basically like, you know, bitter and angry. And you saw that. I'm like, you want to solve your own problems? Go. You got one trip around on the spinning rock. OK, go fix it. And I do. I mean, yes, I get bloviated and angry and I'm angry. I get like that. But the reality is I'm doing my own life, man. And I love doing this. I get to hang out, get to talk with you guys in the afternoon. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I get to do this. I've chosen my limp because I looked in the mirror and said, how do I want to do that? And I've been somewhat successful in that. And I've enjoyed that. So that's where it is. The military basically tells you not to just, you know, don't sit there and blame me. Well, I didn't do that because of that guy over there. No.
Yeah, imagine that flies really well with your superior officers. Oh, it's his fault.
That's the next thing you feel is a fist coming across your face because you're more the problem than the solution at that point.
I imagine you're doing some jumping jacks, running some laps if you do that too, or whatever else, yeah.
I'll give you, well, you want a great example of this in the history of military? I was watching some of the American Battlefield Trust fights that they you know, from the Civil War. They kind of talk about the Civil War. If you go down to Chattanooga, there was Lookout Mountain. It's one of the big hills that's up outside of Chattanooga. It's just this big, huge hill. Kind of this leftover thing from when the glaciers came down and they carved out this area. And it's just really kind of obnoxiously weird, big hill that's out of nowhere. And they, what had happened is, you know, the Northern troops were just, I don't know, you know, the Union officers were like, I don't know how we can take this. And Grant came in there, and the troops were so wanting to impress Grant, they ran up. There's no hill here that's like it. They went running up basically a vertical hill that's like 300 yards you know, up and took it. And they didn't even, they were in the insanely weaker position. They went and did it. Because don't tell me what you can't do. Go show me what you can do. But no, it's the Armageddon world. I'm a 17-time loser, but as an asteroid is plunging to the Earth to kill us, I'm the guy you want to put in charge. Really? No. This is why all these far-right loon balls fantasize about zombie apocalypses, because that's about the only way they can turn themselves into a freaking hero, is 99% of the world is wiped out. But look at me. Thank God I got all that beer and guns. Yeah, really? That's
sounds like that's preppers for you, too.
Preppers. It's like,
you happen to be a lot of right-wingers, by the way.
I got to tell you what. I'll tell you what. I was a smart one. I stored all my urine out back. You know, you call me crazy. You call me crazy, but I'm the smart one.
If there's a zombie apocalypse, why would you want to be living in a shed or a bunker for years on out anyways? I don't know.
I mean, it's like, why don't you step back? I mean, seriously, an asteroid coming towards Earth, zombie apocalypse, whatever. This virus that goes out of control. Why, if your world involves the vast majority of people being killed off for you to be the hero of your story, you really kind of suck at being a hero. I mean, just let's be honest. You yourself are acknowledging it's a pretty steep hill for you at this point. You might want to look in the mirror and say, hey, I got one trip around on the spinning rock. How do I make myself better? Maybe I shouldn't sit here and fantasize about zombie apocalypses. Maybe I should go get the job I want, or find a spouse that loves me, or move to the town I want to live in. Maybe that might be the, or you can hope for the zombie apocalypse. It's one of the two. I mean, you can do it one of the two. I'll be the hero of my story. I just need to wipe out 90% of the population. All right, then.
Sacrifice.
Yeah, the cream rises to the top, doesn't it? 78, have you ever been to Portillo's, the hot dog place? Is it Portillo's?
Yeah, I think I've been there before, yeah.
The Chicago place, it's the Chicago chain. They got one or two around here.
Yeah. I couldn't remember. You're talking like an independent place, or if it's a chain. It's a chain. I know which one you're talking. Yeah.
Well, you might want to be careful the next time you go. A 78-year-old Blaine man has been charged with a misdemeanor after he allegedly left his handgun on a toilet paper dispenser in the bathroom in Maple Grove's Portillo's. Responsible gun ownership. Holy God, you are lucky this did not literally backfire on you. Holy God. Can you imagine if a kid found that gun? And by the way, I don't think this story says whether or not it's posted on the store that you can't come in with a gun. My guess is every store is.
I don't think too many retailer fast food joints allow guns.
Welcome to White Castle. Bring them on in, boys. Because nothing better than after the regret of having our food than having a lot of firearms around. So it's good idea. White Castle, I like you. All right, I'm okay with an occasional slider. According to charges, police were called to the restaurant on 5 p.m. on Monday, March, after Portillo's employees discovered the handgun in the men's bathroom. Dennis Elliott Warre, W-O-R-R-E, it's spelled W-O-R-R-E, but it's pronounced moron, identified by police as the gun's owner, admitted to leaving the weapon and the toilet paper dispenser. Maybe you shouldn't be. If you're so preoccupied in the bathroom, maybe you should check where you're eating. I'm just going to say. Maybe some more fiber, sir, if I may be suggesting. The criminal complaint notes that in the bathroom, the public spaces where families, including children, frequent, you think? The gun was taken to Maple Grove Police Department, with Warre later calling to ask if they had it. Could I get it back? No! Do not give this guy. He left it in a bathroom stall at a fast food restaurant. Okay, I'm probably going to get more grief for calling Portillo's a fast food restaurant, but you left it on the. You know, what? No, don't. He's proven he should not be trusted with a gun.
I'm trying to figure this out here. So you said he left it on the top of the toilet paper dispenser, right?
So I'm guessing it's one of those that's, okay, everyone, let's take the magical journey to the bathroom stall of your standard establishment. You're in the stall. You got the plastic dispenser there with that, industrial strength, we're going to, print headlines on this roll of toilet paper thing. Got two of them there with the slider thing on it because it's going to, in case this one runs out after 4 or 5 years, we got the other one standing on by. That's what I'm guessing is, well, I'm just storing this in my belt buckle. Well, I'll just put it right here on there, which, of course, could have gone off and shot the guy in the next stall. It's like, hey, but still. Then he basically got preoccupied with Wordle or the graffiti within the stall. And then when nature ran its course, decided to, well, better go get another hot dog.
He's trying to. How would have he not figured out it? He was doing, or he left it there. If he's in the stall, he's taking care of his business. You would think, as you're reaching for the toilet paper, you would realize, oh, there's my handgun. Well, I should probably grab that too on the way out.
Maybe we should be lucky he didn't actually. He was paying attention when he grabbed the toilet paper, because that would have been a horrible visit to the emergency room. What happened? Well, I got done in the bathroom, and I thought it was my toilet paper, but it was a gun. And next thing you know, well, how many total holes do I have now? Never mind. I just no.
Either way, this guy's an idiot.
Oh boy, I can pick him up like a six pack. Anyway, yikes. Okay, to everyone out there that's sitting down for an early dinner, sorry, I crossed the line there. Well, not really bad, but still, I mean, I don't know if I would want to have a loaded gun, right there on the toilet paper dispenser. I mean, you stand up, you accidentally knock the thing off, it's bouncing all over the place, it's going to go off.
I'm guessing this guy didn't have the safety on the gun either. I'm guessing he's probably not one of those types.
78 years old.
Yeah.
78 years old. I'm going to guess it's, oh yeah, I forgot my wallet and my gun and my child. I mean, it's going to be one of those things, I'm going to guess. World faces one count of gross misdemeanor, negligent storage of a firearm. Okay. Negligent storage of a firearm. Really, Hennepin County? If convicted, faces up to 1 year in prison, a $3,000 fine. Can I just say this? I'm okay with not putting the guy in jail or giving him a fine. Just take every freaking gun away from him, because he has proven he should not have guns if he's living them around willy-nilly like the Easter Bunny, for God's sakes. Hey, kids, look out. Hey, it's an egg with candy and a pistol. And just that's one of those James Bond ones. Oh, that's great. Dear Lord, what's this guy's house like? In the kitchen, it's like next to the spatula is a gun. Next to the lamp in the kitchen is a gun. Next to the TV remote control is a gun. Is that what his life is like? He shouldn't have them.
What was he doing in the bathroom where he needed to take the gun out of his...
Well, because he's in a stall. I mean, probably is not carrying it like, TJ Hooker in a holster. I don't know why TJ Hooker all of a sudden gets dragged into what he's got is this. My guess is this. He doesn't have a holster on because a holster would show if he carried it in. But he wants to go in because I'm a tough guy with a gun. And they might have a sign, they might not. Our guess is they have a sign saying no firearms. So he goes in there, sneaks it in his waistband, goes in there and sits down to have a hot dog with the ice cold flesh of touching his ice cold steel. And he goes to the bathroom because apparently he's had a few hot dogs. Nature runs its course. Then I got it. Well, what do I do with it now? There's no gun shelf here in the toilet. And I mean, imagine, is that really what we're, the next thing is the Republicans are going to come on out here. The real problem wasn't there was a gun storage facility in every stall. You should have that just out of convenience.
Oh, you are giving them ideas here. That is going to be the next bill proposed by Jeremy Miller and Kurt Dowd in the legislature. Every restaurant is required to
you
have
just
a...
see him doing his Wordle on his phone and not paying attention, grabs over, bang! Ow! You're lucky. Dude, you're lucky a kid didn't walk into that bathroom and pick up that gun and fire it. You're lucky. You're lucky it didn't just drop when you put it on there. You're lucky it didn't shoot someone out there. But you should never be allowed to have a gun again because you clearly cannot be trusted with them. Hot dogs for dinner tonight? Maybe we should go get some, hot dogs after the show.
Be a little careful there, though.
Oh, they run right through you. 952-946-6205. Brett, you've got Patrick Cooligan coming in. What do you guys talk about?
Yeah, we got a number of topics we're talking about, and including some drama with Governor Tim Walz apparently not attending the official governor's fishing opener, even though he is going to the fishing opener, just not the official one. So Republicans are all up in arms over this. It's the silliest thing ever. So Patrick and I will talk about that. And then a little bit, too, on if you remember back when Republicans tried to set up their lobbying club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some bills that are going to outlaw that.
Oh, the grotto?
Yes.
They can't outlaw the grotto, man. Oh, I was looking forward to the Paul Gazelka in the hot tub. Come in, lobbyist. Tell me what your wares are. Grab the loofah. They can't get rid of the grotto. I've got too many funny jokes to go with that. How dare they? All right, fine. All right. Patrick Cooligan from Minnesota Reformer with Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And right now we're joined by Patrick Cooligan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Great resource for the latest in Minnesota news and politics, as we'll be talking about the news in Minnesota politics today. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Always good to be here.
Absolutely. So as you wrote in the newsletter, I believe, from over the weekend for the Minnesota Reformer, you cited the Star Tribune's outdoor columnist Dennis Anderson recently writing that Governor Tim Walz on May 14th will be the first Minnesota governor in more than half a century to skip the formal celebration known as the Governor's Fishing Opener. And, of course, some Republicans running for governor reacted to this news, including Paul Gazelka saying, Walz had tried to take our freedoms, Walz had tried to take our rights, and now he is taking our traditions. But as you write, that's not really the case. Walz is participating in the fishing opener, just not the official fishing opener, correct?
Yeah, we've got some, there's certain men of a certain age in Minnesota who are quite the drama queens. It's my best judgment here. So the issue is that due to the pandemic, it tends to be smaller town cities that host the governor's official fishing opener, and they've struggled in recent years to plan. It takes a year to plan, apparently, to do the fundraising and planning. Because there's just so much uncertainty around the pandemic. Regardless, there is going to be a fishing opener, the governor is going to participate, at least according to the Department of Natural Resources, which sent out a press release in March saying 500,000 Minnesotans are going to be out on lakes and streams, and the Governor Walz will fish with a guy named Tom Newstrom, who's apparently a famous fishing guide, that he'll also be joined by Leech Lake Chairman Farron Jackson Sr. and a Leech Lake fishing guide. But for the governor's critics, that's not enough, and he is breaking some sort of holy tradition. It's really, they've spilled a lot of ink on this fishing opener issue in the Star Tribune. I think they had a story. They had this really long column by Anderson. It was essentially just almost an entire page hit piece on Walz. Their editorial page, they had an unsigned editorial that ran on this Sunday. And then they had a Metro columnist who, to her defense, Jennifer Brooks, she kind of defended Walz through this. I was really taken aback by the whole thing. I called Dennis Anderson, the outdoors columnist who kind of was really so outraged about Walz quote unquote skipping the fishing opener. And I said, I don't really understand, because I have this press release saying he's going to do this, he's going to be on the boat with the Leech Lake chairman and with this fishing guide. And Dennis told me that that's, it's that the traditional, the formal celebration known as the Governor's Fishing Opener is a community celebration and a big deal. That's different from what the governor is doing. He's going fishing with the Leech Lake Tribal Chair essentially by himself. You know, I didn't want to draw too much attention to it, but to me that was really an inappropriate sniping at the Leech Lake Tribal Chair. Mm-hmm. And as trivial as all this seems, there's an important point here, and that is that we expect there's a certain type of Minnesotan, which is the people who are sort of at the center of influence and power in Minnesota, expect the governor to do these sort of rituals and traditions. Well, think about these rituals and traditions. I mean, rituals and traditions are great, but did you ever notice how they tend to be really white and male and rural? And the state has changed a lot. I mean, this is the last 20 years. You know, like something close to 1 in 5 Minnesota children is this child of immigrants. And so there's this idea that every governor has to be, has to pay, due devotion to these old rituals. And it creates a kind of, barriers and sure enough, they've forced us all to talk about the fishing opener for the last 2-3 weeks or whatever. You know, a lot of people are talking about the fishing opener and, you know, and it's, I mean, a lot of people don't fish in Minnesota. I mean, more people play video games in Minnesota than fish. And nobody, you know, people play video games are not complaining that the governor is not, you know, participating in some video game ritual. So it's been a funny, you know, I'm not from Minnesota. Maybe that's part of it. It's been an interesting ritual. It's been an interesting experience to kind of watch all this. The fainting couches that we've had to pull out because the governor is going to do his fishing opener a little bit different than we've done in the past.
Yeah, I'm with you. This whole thing seems silly. I mean, as you mentioned, you're not originally from Minnesota. In my case, I never really got into fishing as a kid or as an adult, so I'm not really that big into the fishing opener. It's not that big of a deal to me. So, yeah, the whole idea that we're going to be up in arms over this is just very silly, and it seems like one of those kind of small town traditions, and maybe that plays to the fact that usually the governor's fishing opener is held in rural areas. It just seems like one of those small town traditions where if you're an elected official and you don't participate in that tradition, well, you're going to have all sorts of stuff to pay for that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've created these requirements, and who gets to set those requirements? And what type of person? It seems trivial, but it's a way to enforce certain kind of cultural and political strictures that I think are not keeping up with the times.
Well, again, Gazelka was the one that ended up sending out the statement criticizing Walls for not taking place in the official governor's fishing opener. And I want to stay on the topic of Paul Gazelka, who, of course, is seeking the Republican nomination for governor because he picked up an endorsement recently from the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. They announced that on Monday they were going to endorse Gazelka for governor. So in your mind, Patrick, how would this impact the race, especially for the GOP primary? I imagine this has to be kind of a feather in the cap for Paul Gazelka to get that endorsement.
Absolutely. I think he's been courting them for at least a couple years. And, you know, I think he wants to be a law and order candidate. And I think that that really burnishes his image, including with probably delegates. I don't know that the MPPOA has much of a political operation at the conventions and so forth, but it's certainly a good endorsement for him. And I would say also it's bad for Rich Stanek, the former Hennepin County sheriff lawmaker, who you would think as a former sheriff would have had some kind of inside track there. You know, he's running, presumably the sheriff is running as a as a law and order guy, and at the time of the last few years, we've seen increasing crime. But that's got to be a significant blow to his campaign, which, so far as I can tell, I mean, I'm not really following the Republican race for governor super closely, but from what I can tell, his campaign thus far has kind of failed to launch. And I think Gazelka is working hard and maybe successfully to be the sort of not Scott Jensen in that race. Scott Jensen is kind of seen as the front runner in terms of money and social media buzz and maybe attracting new Republicans to the race, and maybe as the most Trumpy of the candidates, but there was always going to be some kind of alternative to Jensen if you thought Jensen was not going to be electable, and you were sort of a more regular Republican, and it looks like Gazelka is maybe setting himself up to be the alternative.
Well, and you wrote in your article about this that back in 2010, the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association endorsed DFLer Mark Dayton for governor, which was a big boon to his campaign for getting the DFL nomination and, of course, ending up winning the race and becoming governor. But, of course, with our times being more partisan now, I imagine really no Democrats were probably even considered, I'm guessing, for that endorsement from the Police and Peace Officers Association here in 2022, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they consider Walz. Walz would be a guy who, when he ran for Congress in 2006, would be a guy who would be happy to be arm in arm with police officers, I think, and he would still like to be, but I think there's just the events of 2020, and ever since have been really so traumatic that kind of thing is just not possible anymore. I mean, it's not that long ago. If you remember, Democrats in the 1990s, it was in the early 90s, it was rising crime due to the crack epidemic and a number of other factors. And people like Bill Clinton and Joe Biden, and then, you know, shortly thereafter, Amy Klobuchar were very pro-law enforcement, and the law enforcement endorsement was something to be certainly something to be desired, something they wanted, and that's just completely changed since roughly 2014, when with the police killing of Michael Brown, and just so much more focus on the rise in incarceration and all of the what we now. Many of us view as the injustices of the American criminal justice system and how it's really weighted against Black people in particular. So the politics around police endorsements have completely changed, and we're seeing that now. And in these endorsements that the police, the state police group put out yesterday, which was not only Gazelka, but also I think 17 early endorsements for lawmakers, they were all Republican.
And we're speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Want to switch topics now and revisit something that I know you and I talked about a few weeks ago and possibly even a few months ago, and that has to do with this idea of the Republicans possibly creating this lobbyist club at the state capitol. And just to refresh you on this, a group last year sought an advisory opinion from the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board on the legality of private clubs for lobbyists. And back in October of last year, the board said a club would be okay as long as contributions are received before or after the legislative session. Now, the Reformer reported that it was the Senate Republican campaign finance arm that sought the opinion in that case to create that private club. And this led to questions about the private club, and the GOP faced questions on this issue. Jeremy Miller, the Senate Republican leader, eventually went on to say that his caucus had no plans to create the club. Well, now there's some bills at the Minnesota State Legislature being introduced by both Republicans and Democrats that would ban these sorts of clubs, correct?
Right. So this goes back to the pandemic when lobbyists were complaining that they really had very little access to lawmakers, and the sky was falling, and how could we ever do any government business if lobbyists couldn't talk to lawmakers in the hallway? And you know, what's the point of us giving any money to campaigns if we're not going to be able to get a word in with lawmakers. And so somebody in the Republican caucus, I'm sure it was Paul Gazelka at the time, was the majority leader. He has good relationships with a lot of the business lobby. I'm sure they cooked up this plan and they made the mistake of, I mean, it was a mistake from the get-go, because it was always going to look so, it's a literal, the only thing missing is like cigar smoke from this, private club where Republican lawmakers were going to meet with business lobbyists and figure out ways to kind of screw over consumers and workers. So they made the mistake of asking the campaign board for an opinion about whether or not it would be legal. And unfortunately for them, their name was on it. Shortly thereafter, Jeremy Miller became the majority leader, and he made it clear that they had no interest in, it wasn't really necessary as much when the pandemic is over, because there's lobbyists in the building. So everybody's in the same space again. And so they can have their influence in the hallways, and they're, they don't need a private club to do it. But I think we're all thankful that that lawmakers in both parties are now going to make it clear that this kind of arrangement, and I forgot to mention that this private club, of course, you would pay dues, the lobbyists would pay dues to be given access to it. It's just like the worst kind of Tammany Hall, early 20th century stuff, or 19th century stuff. And so it looks like we're going to, very strong chance that we'll make this we'll make sure this is illegal going forward.
And of course, yeah, thanks to the Reformer for reporting on this and bringing up that it was the Republican Senate GOP campaign arm that was seeking that opinion to possibly create that private club. But you're right. I mean, that absolutely fit the description of a cliche of some sort of political club for lobbyists. And as you said, with paying dues, what could possibly go wrong with that? So glad to see that. It looks like this thing will certainly not be going anywhere. Last topic I wanted to talk to you about, Patrick, has to do with President Biden announcing that his administration would temporarily lift a Clean Air Act rule to allow higher ethanol blended gasoline to be sold throughout the summer in an effort to bring down gas prices. The name of this type of gas is E15 gas, which is blended up to 15% ethanol and is usually banned in the United States between June through September to limit air pollution. But of course, high gas prices has changed thinking on this now. Now, I'm curious about the reaction from Minnesota politicians, because I imagine a lot of our Minnesota politicians are probably happy with this. I even remember some DFLers being happy with the Trump administration when they also allowed E15 gas to be sold, I think back in 2019. So talk about what Minnesota politicians are saying about the Biden administration proposing allowing E15 gas to be sold during the summer months.
Right. I mean, the only sacred cow more important than the fishing opener, I think, is farming. And so this is a boon for our corn crop. Congresswoman Angie Craig and I think Senators Smith and Klobuchar are certainly rallying around this regulatory move that'll help the ethanol industry and therefore corn growers. So I think it has dubious environmental benefits, the ethanol that is, but it's also not clear that it's going to lead to a lot more air pollution this summer, but certainly a nice gift to Midwestern politicians who love their ethanol.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we unfortunately are just about out of time. We have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Again, go to MinnesotaReformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics and the great reporting they do over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, thanks so much for the time today. Appreciate it.
Great to be here.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I talked about this a little bit earlier with Jack Rice when he joined us in the 4 o'clock hour. The South Dakota House on Tuesday impeached State Attorney General Jason Rovsberg over a 2020 car crash where he killed a pedestrian, but initially said he might have struck a deer or another large animal. And once again, I want to make sure we understand, it was clear at the time of the accident that he had hit a human being, because it had to have been. They found his eyeglasses of the victim in the front seat of Rovsberg's car. So any argument that he didn't know was a human, the person had come through the windshield, left their eyeglasses there, and then fallen back out of the car. So he knew what exactly had happened. He is, and it's, this is, once again, this is the disturbing part. There's not a single damn Republican in South Dakota that wouldn't have, if this was a Democratic attorney general, wouldn't have immediately demanded jail time for the murder of one of our innocent civilians. Would have demanded the resignation immediately. Funny story, I'll get to that here in a second. Not exactly a stunning endorsement of the impeachment process here by the Republicans. Rovsberg is the first official to be impeached by the South Dakota history. He will at least temporarily be removed from office pending the historic Senate trial, where it takes two-thirds of a majority to convict and impeach charges, so I don't think they're going to get that. Rovsberg pled no contest last year to a pair of traffic misdemeanors in the crash, including making a legal lane change. He has cast Joseph Beaver's death as a tragic accident. Once again, the entire system in South Dakota is flawed. Because like I said, I guarantee you, if a black person would have done this, how dare you? This is, you're guilty. If a black person had hit someone with their car and there was 1/10 of the evidence against them, they would already be in jail for 20 years in South Dakota. End of story. This is you're Republican. Well, then the rules are different from you. In voting, 36-31, not exactly a slam dunk vote there. 31 Republicans refused to hold the Attorney General of South Dakota accountable for murdering a dude with his car. The Republican-controlled House charged him with committing crime that caused someone's death, making numerous misrepresentations to law enforcement officers after the crash, and using his office to navigate the criminal investigation. So 31 people, 31 Republicans in the South Dakota House, 31 of them said that committing crimes that caused someone's death, making numerous misrepresentations to law enforcement, and using his office to try to navigate the criminal investigation, that's okay. He's a Republican. He can do that stuff. And like I said, imagine what those 31 would be like if it was a Democratic attorney general. Oh, how dare he defile that office by staying in there? It's disturbing. When we're dealing with the life or death of one of your citizens, I think that weighed heavily on everyone's consider- Well, it did not. It was a 36-31 vote. It didn't weigh heavily on too many people. 31 Republicans are okay with the attorney general murdering someone with his car and basically walking away scot-free back to his job like it's a ho-hum, just another day. Dropped off the mail, picked up my cleaning, killed a dude with my car. You know, the standard. 31 Republicans. 31 Republicans in South Dakota. This is why this is getting so obscene. Rittenhouse, the four terrorists over in Michigan. This guy, the 1-6... You've got people who are clearly guilty of crimes, but because they're Republican, the system is trying their best to cover for them. And that's insanity. We're dealing with the life of one of your citizens. I think that weighed heavily on everyone, said Republican Will Mortensen, who introduced the articles of impeachment. A spokesman for Rovsberg did not reply to requests for comment on the vote. Tim Borman, the Attorney General's chief staff, said his staff would professionally dedicate ourselves to the work while Rovsberg is forced to take a leave. Make sure he's not driving anywhere. Rosberg, who took office in 2019, was returning home from a Republican dinner in September 2020 when he struck and killed Beaver. He was walking along a rural highway. The sheriff who responded after Rosberg called 911 initially reported it as a collision with an animal. Rosberg said he did not realize he hit a man until he returned the next day and found the body. The highway patrol concluded that Rosberg's car crossed completely into the highway's shoulder before hitting Beaver, and criminal investigations said later they didn't believe some of Rosberg's statements. The House rejected the recommendations of a GOPAC majority report from a special investigative committee, which argued that anything wrong he did was not part of his official duties in office. So that was their argument. You know, sure, he murdered a guy with his car, but hey, have you seen his filing system? It's top-notch. Top-notch. Yeah, sure, he killed a man with his car, but man, does he manage the vacation schedule in that attorney general's office like a master? Oh, I don't know. Wow. God, it just, like I said, think about the effort and the time that they are spending to take someone who's as guilty as the freaking day is long and basically prevent them from ever being held accountable for it simply because he's a Republican. God, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. But even Republican lawmakers who argued his actions did not meet constitutional grounds for impeachment said Rosberg should resign. You think? I mean, I want to congratulations, Republicans of South Dakota, for basically doing the absolute least you could do to try to hold this guy accountable. And you know, the look at the way that these people are. I mean, it's ludicrous. This is insanity. You are now at the point where Republicans, you could have, let's just say there was a Republican candidate for governor who one day was driving to a gas station and got scared because he saw a black guy and shot and killed him. Right now, do you think that the Republican Party, if that person said, I was my right to kill that person, I had the right to do it, I'm sorry you're upset, but I'm not going to withdraw from the race. How many Republicans do you think would come out and say, you know what, yeah, he's got a good point. He shouldn't have to resign. Oh, I think the courts will take care of it, and if the courts find him guilty. I mean, think about Al Franken and the demands that there couldn't be an investigation while he was in office. He had to resign. And the Republicans are so good at convincing half the Democrats are like, yeah, you know what? You'd probably need to resign. That's the standard. Democrats, if there's a hint you've done something wrong, you need to resign, quit, and get out of the way. Republicans, Matt freaking Gaetz. Matt Gaetz. For God's sakes, Jennifer Carnahan's buddy was Anthony Lazzaro. And there is zero. 30 years ago, if you had a Republican that had a close associate have that happen, she wouldn't be running for office. She'd be basically, that'd be the end of their career. She's running for the Minnesota First seat. If you don't see where this is going, I don't know what we can do. But maybe that's what it's going to take is all of a sudden, you know, these people, these influencers on TikTok and these video game guys and the people that I just don't want to talk about politics, all this. Maybe what it's going to take is all of a sudden them not showing up. And, oh, by the way, the internet now is like cable television. And it's a tiered system, and you have to pay a premium price to get the access to all the stuff that you used to have to have. You got access for a limited price. Or it's going to take, oh, by the way, you basically are going to now, because you're middle class and lower class, you're not going to have public schools anymore. We're getting rid of them. You can get a charter school, but you got to pay for that privately. And that's just that. We're going to get rid of them. And you know, any kind of trainer opportunity, that we're not going to give that to you. If you want a job, you got to go work at a fast food restaurant. Then it seems like then and only then people are like, how did we get here? And I just want to look at these people and it's like, were you just playing video games the entire time? Is that what it is? You just never go outside of your little bubble? I don't know. Every single day, Republicans introduce new laws that hurt people. They don't help people outside of a small handful of ultra-wealthy people. And at the same time, they do things to hurt people. And at the same time, they ignore obscene crimes that Republicans do because Republicans can commit crimes in the Republican world. Republicans can commit crimes in the Republican world. And Matt, you'll say, Matt, they impeached him. 36 to 31, barely the very least they could do. And there's a decent chance he's not going to be held accountable. Get everyone you know registered to vote and get them to the freaking polls. Get everyone you know registered to vote and get them to the polls. Get everyone you know, make sure they're registered to vote and get them to the polls. That is no longer a mere suggestion. That is the decision on whether or not we're going to have a freaking functional society at this point. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So funny today. You can tell the compassion of your standard Republican Christian today. Earlier today, the inflation numbers came out and they're pretty bad. 8.2%, highest in 40 years. It's been pretty rough out there and I'll get back to that here in a second. But of course, then there was the attack in New York on the subway down there. And there's like four or five people was like, don't allow them to change the news cycle. Who cares? There was some shooting in New York. Blah, 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 blah. Get back to talking about how Joe Biden's failed America. That was kind of the whole thing. I'm going to go back to this. I'll just read from the story. Inflation in the Twin Cities metro hit a record high last month as food and fuel prices continue to surge. The consumer price index for the 16-county region jumps 8.2% in the past year, according to a federal data released on Tuesday, just below the 8.5 national inflation rate reported by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. For food prices, Minnesota shoppers may take some solace in the fact that it could be worse. Year over year, grocery prices rose 10.3% nationally, but only 7.3% around the Twin Cities metro. Prices for certain consumables, like cereal, bakery products, alcohol, rose faster than the national average. Oh, I have no doubt the alcohol prices went up. These inflationary challenges run all the way through the supply chain. We're coming to the grocery store, said Jamie Fuvel, president of the Minnesota Grocers Association. The last I'd heard, the income increase, though, covered most of the inflation in Minnesota. It was like 7.2% in the metro area. And so it's not like you're losing pay and then you've got the inflation. It's inflation and salaries are kind of keeping close path with each other, at least here in Minnesota. Here's the one thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to keep saying this because every day I see, you know, we get the Forbes list of the richest people on the planet, and they're making all this money. Really? Okay, I thought it was the supply chain. I thought it was climate change. I thought it was the war in Ukraine. I didn't think it was blingity bling bling bling. Johnny billionaire needs a little more billions. You know what I mean? Because it seems to me, if you are actually increasing the billionaires' wealth margins in the billion-dollar category, the inflation is not nearly as much the supply chain and climate change and the war in Ukraine. It seems like it's far more wealthy people basically redistributing wealth up higher by basically saying, the hell with you poor people, we are getting ours. Because that's what it sure seems like's going on right now. And the thing which is funny is I hear these inflation stories and they'll be on the same page of the story, like billionaires getting more billionaire. And you're like, and it's like, well, the reason why inflation's going up is because of the supply chain. What about the guy that owns all the companies making, you know, $12 billion more in the last year off of this? That's got to add something to it. Oh, no, don't just ignore that. It's the supply chain. No, how about the guy that's basically putting all the money in his pocket? No, Matt, it's the war in Ukraine. I think what we're seeing here is a classic redistribution of wealth that generally is, we're starting to really, and I got to tell you what, fiscally, this country is starting to take the turn of pre-revolution France at this point, where you had this insanely wealthy upper class at the expense of everyone else. And everything that the wealthy did was to take money away from the poor and give it to them. That was their whole goal. We're starting to take that turn. Needless to say, inflation, courtesy of billionaires wanting more money. Native Roots Radio is up next. You have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.